Welcome to Relative Paths. We're a podcast about web development, web design, and that sort of thing. I am Mark Phoenix.
And I'm Ben Hutchings.
This week, we've got a bit more of a kind of pensive, kind of thoughtful episode, because we're talking about dogmatism. As internet users, we know that there are, you know, a number of opinions available on the internet about a number of things, and those opinions can often be stated very strongly. And even in something which kind of on the surface should be fairly benign, like web development, there are opinions which can be stated very, very strongly and very robustly. So we're just going to sort of talk about that and sort of dig into why that is and sort of what we as kind of conscientious kind of individuals can try to do to kind of to be reasonable in the way we deal with other people. Now, we decided to tackle this topic after reading a blog post by Chris Coyer, and so we have the man himself. Chris Coyer is joining us. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks very much. Thanks for having me. Yeah, this is a topic near and dear to my heart recently. So yeah, you saw my post, I guess, towards the end of last year, but I've been, I don't know, I poke at this idea every year or so, because this is usually something triggers me, you know, some silly tweet or something, some internet personality that I'm just like, OMG with the dogmatism.
So was it anything in particular that compelled you to write that? Was it kind of just, is it just kind of like a bit of a sort of the tide sort of builds up and of like general dogmatism?
Yeah, it's more like that. I can't imagine what the exact, you know, sentence I read was that triggered it. But there's so many that it's not hard to find. I mean, I don't know how many of you or your listeners are Twitter users, but just pop it open and take a stroll. I think you'll find a few.
It's kind of surprising, or not, that anything, literally anything, can kind of turn into a bit of a, turn into fisticuffs on the internet. I was having a look through one of the regular posts that seemed to be around at the moment of people being a bit disenchanted with Apple and Mac OS. And somebody announced that they were changing to Windows 10. And then you dig into the comments and there's loads of accusations that he's some sort of corporate shill or a plant and the paid post. And then people start kind of turning on each other like it's like a football match, sort of like a good UK football match where people are just kind of fighting with each other. So
yeah, it really can be anything. And it's so funny because everybody's on the same team, not even in the global sense of like, we're all human beings just trying to survive. But even in computers, you're like, you just need the thing because you're trying to type emails and watch videos and figure out where to go to lunch too, like everybody else. I mean, even the things you do on the computer are the same.
Yeah. Do you think this is a problem which is kind of particular to sort of web development? I don't know if we swim in the online sea a bit more than sort of regular folks. Because it's our job, do we just become almost a bit sort of institutionalized to this sort of way of dealing with each other, because we're so often kind of having our interactions in 140 characters?
Maybe. Yeah, it's certainly not limited to Twitter, too. I think that you see it there, but we are kind of swimming in conversation between GitHub threads and what people are talking about in Slack or whatever you use for that, and email threads and, you know, just blog posts back and forth and stuff. Where the conversation takes place in the world of web design and development is everywhere all the time. It feels like a very big, always on conversation. And that's what might be a little unique to us. Like, I don't think that, certainly not dogmatism, which is, I don't know if we care to define that or whatever. Sometimes I think about that of people that hear us say a word too often. They're like, what does that even mean? So maybe we ought to take a minute for that. But yeah, is it absolutely unique to web design and development? Probably not, but there's certain things that are unique to web design and development that help it along.
Yeah. Did you want to define it literally?
I don't even know if I'm qualified, but I like the word. I tend to not like words like this that feel like, I don't know, that 15% of people listening to you just ignore it because they don't know what it means or think you're trying to be fancy or something. But it's just such a kind of perfect word that has nothing to do with our canine friends, but just it just means unwavering in belief in a way. And that, like, when you say something that just, you say it in such a way that it's like in absolutely true not open to debate about this subject. That's how I think of it.
I just did define dogmatism, and Google brought up the tendency to lay down principles as undeniably true without consideration of evidence or the options of others.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes it's mixed with a little arrogance, and I don't really care if it does or not. I prefer all things without arrogance, but I think you can be dogmatic without being arrogant. I mean, yeah. I don't know if that breaks the definition, but in how I like to think of it is like, I don't really care if you're being a jerk or not. I think it's just as damaging as it is when you make big, bold statements that leave no wiggle room.
It's interesting because I think sometimes you can do it without being fully aware of it. You maybe just need someone to give you a bit of a tap on the shoulder, because a bit of a constant for us on this podcast is we're often taking a bit of a prod at people that use Dreamweaver. and yeah, there we go.
Sorry, I shouldn't have to. Oh, no.
But that's kind of our reaction to it. We kind of think, and it's a bit of a figure of fun for us, but we had one of our listeners
A joke is one thing.
Yeah. But it's kind of, you wonder whether kind of this kind of, maybe sort of making fun of something, ridiculing something, whether that's in a way sort of dogmatism through jest. And I think sometimes if you think a thing is a bit lame, revealing my feelings on Dreamweaver, but if you think a thing might be a bit lame and you just want to state it with some sort of verve or enthusiasm, where's the kind of dividing line between that and being dogmatic? I guess, is it just in the kind of allowing somebody sort of right to reply, maybe?
Yeah, this is a very good question. I think as long as your personality is such and people can kind of tell while listening to you that if they actually use Dreamweaver or are actually productive in it, that you don't actually dislike them or think they're an idiot or something. I think that's a little tricky. I mean, I'm not trying to shut down all tech jokes. but yeah, there's a way that you could make a tech joke that feels very exclusionary or whatever. You know, the Dreamweaver is a classic one. It really has been. It is, you know, it has been in to make fun of Dreamweaver for a long time now. You know, that one's almost. And I think it's funny because it feels a lot like the, you know, the joking about IE, which just felt old 5 years ago, I feel like. Like, even when it was warranted, it felt like got a little boring. And now that, you know, there's not much to complain about anymore, especially with Edge or whatever, it's really old.
Have you ever had any contact with any of the people that worked on IE? Because I wonder how that went down with them. Because I think sometimes if we prod at a tool that like a workaday dev uses, if they're kind of up against it and they feel like a bit like they're not, you know, I guess it's sort of to do with sort of punching up or punching down. Like if we kind of make fun of something that somebody's hard pressed uses.
Yeah. It's not kind of fair, is it?
Yeah. But if you're kind of like poking fun at a behemoth like Microsoft, I guess they take it.
They can handle it. Yeah.
Yeah. But have you ever had any contact with anybody that's worked on IE? I just wonder how it goes down there.
Yeah, I can't remember exact conversations, but I certainly know people at Microsoft, and they're well aware of what they're up against and the conversation around IE and stuff. I mean, I wasn't at the branding meetings, but it couldn't be more obvious why they changed it to Edge. They probably should have done it a couple of versions back. I mean, they can't fight the IE stigma. It's too deep.
Yeah.
So they just had to change, and of course it was a good idea, and they're still fighting it. It's going to be quite a long time until it goes away, but it will, because Edge is fine, and I think the new generation kind of sets the tone in a big way. You know, I think in the new generation of web developers is going to be huge. Because it's just more and more popular of a job, and there's more and more coding schools, and the talk around the world is, you know, learn to code, learn to code, learn to code. And so I think all these people kind of growing up with that being their base is going to be like, why is IE bad or whatever? I don't even know. Yeah, they don't even sell computers with IE on it anymore. And they're just going to be instantly bored of that joke, and it won't land with them, and then it will finally go away.
Yeah. It's interesting. I wonder if... that thing you mentioned, that there's more people coming into the industry, because I guess sort of when, because Ben, how long have you been Uber developer for?
Sort of 96, I suppose I started, but wow. 99 was when I was first employed to do it.
Yeah, and how about you, Chris?
Much later, like 2006.
All right, okay. Because I wonder if there's, I think a lot of people are coming into web development now as a career choice. You can imagine them sort of weighing up the options, thinking, do I want to be an accountant? Do I want to be an architect? And right. going
even
for web
10 years ago, much later for me, that wasn't the case. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I wonder if that kind of changes the kind of the tone of it, because I think there'll be a point where everybody would be enthusiasts, where there would be this kind of affection for the tech, for the actual thing that you're doing. But I wonder if, because there are more and more people who see it as a job, maybe whether we talk about it with a little bit less affection than we did sort of years ago, maybe that contributes to kind of the dogmatism a little bit.
I bet you're right. Because it definitely feels differently. You know, I can see, you know, as my career started shortly before I launched CSS Tricks. You know, I launched it right away when I knew nothing about this industry, you know, and it's kind of grown up with me. And the enthusiasm for tech back then was amazing. I can go back and look at really early posts on CSS Tricks that are just garbage, just useless posts that did nothing for the good of the internet. And there'll be like 50 comments on it that are all like, wow, this is amazing. You can make text bold, you know, like really good stuff.
You can make text bold.
And now, you know, you pour your heart into something and you'll get 20 comments that need to be deleted because they're like, you know, your mother stinks, or, you know, they'll just awful people saying awful things about unrelated things. And it's like, what happened? Like, our tone didn't change. If anything, we're doing a better job and we have better design and we're more conscious of our community. And I've grown up and learned how to treat people better. And, you know, like I'm a better person back then. Our site is a better site, and yet the community around it isn't so good. Not to say that the CSS Tricks community is bad. It's absolutely not. It's a good one. But despite that, the industry as a whole is just a little worse, I'd have to say. It just feels like a bummer to say. It's not, you know, you can still have a great time here, and you can. It's just, I think you need to circle the wagons around good people a little more than you used to.
Yeah, I was trying to sort of think about how to articulate the fact that there are many more people involved. There's a lot more people writing stuff. There's a lot more tools out. Most of the tools we use have gone through most of their bug checking and passed their beta stage, and they're fairly stable. And it's allowing people to, the people that get involved don't need to be as enthusiastic as they used to. So if you think of your sort of Unix, Linux type user who now can install Linux and be up and running and be on the web in an hour. I mean, no compiling your own kernel and tearing all your hair out and then trying to work out how to do it and then asking online and getting shouted at for the first 20 comments because you shouldn't be using Unix or whatever. And then finally managing to get up and online, you can download distros that just work out the box, and you can be publishing a website with something like Azure or whatever. You could be building
it's
online.
It's a bummer that has to turn you into a jerk then. Like, when does that happen?
I don't know. I'm just thinking that because it's so much easier to get involved, so many more people are getting involved, so there's more jerks coming in.
I wonder if people...
is that what it is?
I wonder if it's a bit like Everest. Like, to climb Everest years ago, you had to be a serious mountaineer.
I do think it's exactly like that.
Yeah, and now you get people who sort of want to do it on their kind of finding themselves sort of tour of like, you know, and...
go up Everest to take a selfie.
Yeah, and it kind of results in people who aren't qualified to go up, going up, and people getting themselves into tricky situations. Not that that's a direct analogy of new people coming into the industry, the web industry, not being qualified, but I wonder if people just aren't as willing to kind of to do the climb as we were.
I have a loose theory that more equals worse, kind of too. I think that's there's something to that. You know, if there's 10 people in your community, you share this like intimate bond. You know, you're the underdogs, the counterculture. And when that's totally evaporated, as it has nearly.
Yeah.
Now, so. Yeah. And I guess there's with a smaller group, I guess people self-regulate a bit more, don't they? Because the stakes are a bit higher. If you annoy the group that you're in, then you're out of the group.
But, yeah, true.
But now there's plenty of places for somebody who's dreadful to go to. So for us then, how do we scan ourselves, do you think, to check that we're not being sort of dogmatic? Because, I mean, we get a little bit of feedback from listeners if we've belittled something a bit too enthusiastically. But I think sort of just for yourself.
Well, we do, and we've got a tiny, tiny listener base in comparison to Chris. I mean, yeah. do you get feedback, Chris, from people if you say something that people are not happy with?
I think I would. I don't.
But you never does.
Oh, no, I get plenty of feedback on other things. But yeah, I try to. Maybe I got enough of it early on that I know how to avoid it now. And I'm not even sure how I avoid it. But I certainly, my tone at least attempts to be. By tone, I mean literally the words that I publish on CSS Tricks, but also in social media and also in marketing copy or emails I write or anything. So the tone kind of follows you everywhere. Hopefully has some aspect of we're all in this together. This stuff can be weird and complicated, but that's okay. We'll get through it. Here's what worked for me, but that's just me. That kind of thing, rather than just stating huge things. That's the dogmatism thing we started with, is just being like, you know, never use the star selector in CSS. It's bad for performance or whatever. Like, just the word never there has ruined it already, you know. Yeah. And it's an easy word to write because it feels very clear. It feels like a rule that should be followed. You read it somewhere and I'm going to say it again. And, you know, find that the people, and then if you are going to say something like that, it's kind of like swearing or something. You know, like the people you know in life that swear the least, when they do swear, it's more, it means more.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
More, you can do that.
More impact.
Yeah. Which is great. It's like keeping it in your back pocket. It's a superpower. You know, people that swear all the time, they don't have that superpower. You've thrown away that superpower for nothing.
I wonder if there are any Marvel executives like listening in. Swearing man.
Yeah. now that you have it, though, if you're the person who's very chill about things and just says, I don't know, here's some data, this is what worked for us kind of thing, that when you say, never do this, it's a, you know, people listen.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Oh, you would hope so. Yeah, it would kind of give it a bit more thrust, wouldn't it? Does it mean though that we have to sometimes water things down a bit? Because we were sort of in thinking about this show, we were trying to think of times when you can legitimately say never or you must, or again, not that happens sort of with like some of the social issues that sort of like come into what we do, but even in sort of technical terms, what things are we allowed to say? You must never, or you shouldn't do that, or
very rarely.
Very rare.
I mean, what is? Yeah. I'm trying to think of a few of like the things that are like popular to say without caveat. You know, like jQuery is dead, or you know. You can't use grid layout because global browser support is too low. Just soundbite done, tweet it, you know? And you're like, you know, like or whatever. Like the thing, anything that's like that feels kind of like, yeah, they're right. They're not right, you know, that there's just more nuance to everything. I would say rarely is it to announce anything is uncontestably true.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a sensible thing, and I think even if you do state something fairly strongly, I think you've always got to allow someone to kind of pick you up on stuff, haven't you? Yeah, you think so, Ben's
yeah,
give me snake eyes.
We could probably think of some examples. I mean, there's some, but they tend to be more. I don't know. Never be a jerk, or I don't know, like the things that are
like you said, social things.
Always thank people. Yeah, social things are easier to. to be like that. But there's so much reward in doing it. I mean, there's other aspects here. It's not like just, oh, there's more people, so it's easier to be like a pseudo-anonymous and be a jerk and have the consequences be low to that. It's not only that the consequences are low, but the reward is higher too. Like if you're you know, Captain Strong Pants on social media and you're just all you do is announce and declare things, you know, you might get some people are like, well, that guy's a prick, but then they can't wait to follow you and wait for the next thing that you say. You know, it seems like there's reward in this kind of alpha, just saying stuff kind of thing, you know? Yeah. And that comes from life, you know? Like Hulk Hogan didn't like, you know, be like, I might win my next match. Maybe we're going to, you know, we're going to go at it. We're both very skilled wrestlers, but whoever is the more skilled wrestler is going to win. And it's really just a coin toss. No, they're like, I'm going to tear him apart. You know? And that's why people liked him.
I watched that though. Gentleman wrestling.
I went to WordCamp London the weekend, and they had three different tracks, and they made sure that there was an accessibility talk on every track at one point, so that really trying to push it. And the one I went to see was really good, and the guy that gave it was kind of quite do and don't about things, but it was done, in an acceptable way. Like, he was just saying, just don't do that. It's not helpful here. It's not helpful for there.
We're not just talking about people. Accessibility, you know, falling into that category.
But it's semi-social. It was a technical thing he was advising us not to do because of the social repercussions of it. Mm. And that sort of worked quite well. But yeah.
I think one of the things with dogmatism, it's about not providing evidence. And again, not allowing some sort of feedback. So I guess even with somebody who's working on accessibility, I think that person trying to persuade you, aren't they? So there's going to be a bit of back and forth. But if somebody just kind of climbs on top of their plinth with a megaphone and just shouts stuff, I guess that's more of a glaring example. But I thought what you said, Chris, was interesting about people just being awful and getting attention. I was listening to a podcast a while ago that was talking about a thing, I think it's called the tragedy of the commons, where when there's an abundant resource that we puny humans just can't regulate ourselves. We have to gobble it all up, and the abundant resource now is attention.
Yeah.
And because you can get attention by being dreadful, people tend to gravitate toward that. I wonder how many people, even in our industry, are more dogmatic than they, you know, when they're dealing with people than they are in real life, whether they kind of shout these awful things on Twitter and then go into the bathroom and weep to themselves that they've become this kind of this dreadful thing. Yeah. So I do wonder about that. In our research, we had a look at the Dunning-Kruger effect, which was fascinating because we wanted to talk about it from the other side, where, you know, we have an industry which has so much dogmatism, but also has a lot of imposter syndrome as well. Should we explain?
Right. It's almost the opposite, right? Yeah. I mean, feel free to. Why don't you define it first?
I think it's that sort of situation where you feel like you're not the person who should be doing the thing that you're doing, that you think somebody else should be doing it. It's a bit like, I get that feeling when I'm driving a car sometimes. I feel like a grown-up's going to beckon me over and say, what are you doing driving a car? It's dangerous. You go and sit in the back. I should be driving the car. And I think sometimes we can get that feeling that we're just underqualified, we don't really know what we're doing, and that we're a fraud, and that we're going to get found out. And that seems to be kind of rife again in web development. But I guess lots of people suffer with it, don't you? I mean, do you think it's a thing again which is peculiar or sort of more common in our industry, or is it something that everybody gets, I guess?
Yeah. I think life is complicated enough that you might suffer from it sometimes, but not all the time. And it's possible that you got a little Dunning-Kruger thing going on, and you can be dogmatic sometimes. You know, like they're not necessarily, all these things are all kind of woven together to make people as complicated as they are. But yeah. I could see that. It looks like the study was This is actually quite good. This would make for good radio. The study was inspired by MacArthur Wheeler, a man who robbed two banks after covering his face with lemon juice in the mistaken belief that because lemon juice is used as invisible ink, that it would prevent his face from being recorded on surveillance cameras.
He had really good paws there. So he got something out of it.
But right, yeah, it'd be weird to see that level of stupidity being... It was that blog post might get shared around because they're, you know, because somebody was, you know, why use jQuery when there's CSS or something kind of crazy like that? Then people would share it around and laugh at it, but it wouldn't get too much attention.
So that's the first part of the study, wasn't it? The idea that people that don't have much ability think they overestimate their abilities. But then the same test suggested the other end of the scale, that high ability individuals,
I guess so, yeah,
underestimate their abilities. They don't think they're as good as they are, and that's sort of what comes into the sort of imposter syndrome thing,
yeah,
which is a shame, because you can get these loud, shouty people that really don't know what they're doing, that everyone's listening to, and these very capable individuals that do know what they're doing, but not shouting much because they don't think that anyone would want to listen to them.
Yeah. It feels very satisfying to know about, right? I can remember being like in college and being like the shy nerd who'd like try to go to a bar and be like, I can meet women, but I can't really, you know, and then there's just idiots all around you just having a great time and spilling their beers and they get all the attention. But really, like, you're the, I don't know, you're like
better person,
the better man, you know, but you just can't get it done. So when you read stuff like this, you're like, oh, I see, there's a psychological effect that explains all of this.
Why don't we should have Dunning-Kruger classes in sort of high school, shouldn't we?
How to recognize fake news. How to recognize the Dunning-Kruger effect. Yeah.
But I wondered with the Dunning-Kruger effect there, I read a post by, I can't remember who it was, about saying just. So if somebody comes to you with a tech problem, and quite often people say...
Brad Frost, wasn't it?
Just do this, just do that. Oh, yeah. And I wonder if that's the other end of the Dunning-Kruger effect, because sometimes I tend to feel it. I think if I've worked this out, then it must be simple. So if I explain it to this person, you know, and... when you're saying, oh, just do this, it doesn't mean that you're assuming that the person you're talking to...
You forget all the steps that took you originally to get to that point.
It's not even that. It's kind of you forget that the person, you know, you're assuming that you're the fool. You're the person who doesn't know what they're doing. And you assume that the other person is more competent than you. So in your head, you're thinking, how come this person hasn't worked it out? Because I'm only me and I don't really know anything. So when you say, just do this, it's kind of an indication that you...
That puts a different slant on the just thing, because I tend to think people that say just do this are not using much empathy, if you like. They're not they're not realizing that the other person maybe can't.
Yeah. Dunning-Kruger is everywhere.
Oh, wow.
It's tempting to use those words it's like almost you feel like you're helping them out almost, because you're like, don't worry, just do this. Like, that's the lack of tone in written language, is that you...
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't come across. So you're trying to be helpful, but yeah, it's something to avoid. And, you know, I've thought about this a lot. I've, you know, kind of a related post on, definitely avoid just, but also basically, obviously, simply, of course, clearly, everybody knows. This list is so long of, like, those words that, you know, you're trying to breeze past somebody or rub their shoulders a little bit on the way. It's like, no, just stop and just be clear. Everybody appreciates clarity. I don't know when I learned that one time, but I always thought that's a nice thing to learn when you're communicating with people, is that, like, if somebody's new and they don't understand what you're talking about, they very much appreciate a clear explanation that doesn't do any of the shoulder rubbing and stuff. It just explains it. And people that really know the subject matter very well also appreciate the clarity. Like, nobody doesn't appreciate the clarity.
I've noticed that, actually, because I often feel worried about explaining something very clearly because I think it sounds patronizing. But if the person that you're explaining it to does understand fully how to do something, and you've effectively just taught them something they've known for a long time, they normally just say, okay, yeah, I'm cool with that, thanks. But it's often the individuals that don't quite know, but they feel like they should know, that might get a bit, oh, you're so patronizing. Have you ever noticed that? I don't know, because I sometimes write emails to clients where I have to talk them through doing something, and sometimes I work for agencies, so I'm talking to other developers or or especially I find it's when I'm talking to developer designers, and I think they probably don't know much about Git branching, for example, but they know how to FTP or SSH into something. So I'm thinking, I'm going to have to explain the whole thing and kind of semi-apologize for being a bit verbose, just in case they're thinking, yeah, I know all this. Because chances are they probably don't. You kind of got to guess.
Yeah.
But one or two people have taken exception. You know, you're teaching me a job. Okay, I'm sorry. I really am not trying to teach you your job. I'm just trying to be clear.
I wonder if it's a bit dogmatism on their part, because it should be quite obvious to someone that you've done all you can to like preserve the other individual's dignity, but be useful.
So it's probably called something else. It's probably got another double-barreled study name.
It reminds me of like Neil deGrasse Tyson, kind of, who's like a famous, you know, everybody knows Neil deGrasse Tyson. I think scientists love him, and I think the kind of most of the rest of the world like him. But if there's anybody out there that doesn't like him, it's like burgeoning scientists that are like, he didn't explain it to my liking.
I don't,
but I've just Googled him. I'm sorry to say. Is an American astrophysicist, cosmologist, author, science communicator.
He's like the new Carl Sagan. But yeah, I wonder if part of that is because people who are learning something, they like to put on the... I think it can be quite difficult to be in that phase, because I'm quite new to web development. And sort of in the early stages, sometimes I'd be in conversations and I'd be in way over my head, and people, you know, I wouldn't understand what people were saying. And so you have that kind of, am I in too deep to say I don't understand this? If I said this 5 minutes ago, it'd be fine. But I've just realized I've been looking at somebody's screen for 20 minutes, kind of weeping inside because I'm afraid I'm going to be found out. And I think sometimes it's, I don't know if that's a lack of humility or on the part of me there. I was in a situation fairly recently where I had to fix a Perchin store that was put together by, I think, a company's IT team who thought they'd have a go at web development and got it spectacularly wrong. And when I was trying to very gently guide them through the process, they got a little prickly. And I think, I don't know if it's fear on their part of being sort of found out. So I don't know if kind of, again, how does this relate to dogmatism? I wonder if some people can be dogmatic in their response to you, sort of like when you're trying to help them out. So how do we fix it? How do we fix the web community? I mean, like, what is it that we can do, do you think, that to help, to make sure that we're not being dogmatic, to kind of, to try and be conscious of how we come across, because sometimes that can be difficult. And what do we do if we're confronted with people who are dogmatic? Like, how do we deal with that?
Well, yeah, it may be one of these big topics that just kind of doesn't have an answer, but that's not very satisfying. I do strongly believe that everybody and everything is based on incentives. People do things because they're incentivized to do it. And that can work in our favor. In fact, we have to utilize that. There has to be an incentive to change, or it's not going to happen. It just won't. It's just like, that's always how things go. And I would say to people out there, that there is an advantage, there is incentive to toning down your, if you feel like you tend to be a dogmatic kind of person and making these bold statements and stuff, that the advantage is that you come across as more honest, you come across as more likable. It just opens up bigger conversation. I feel like there's not a lot of room for the super mouthy, strong opinion person in the workplace usually. I think if you're really super dogmatic, that you tend to make not as good of an employee somewhere. So I think there's a lot of incentive to just to being being non-dogmatic, being really open-minded and relaxed in your opinion. I think it makes for a better life. You make for a better human being. So I think if that can sink in your brain, realize that there's actually more advantage the other way around, and that it's kind of few and far between the people who are really dogmatic and really actually benefit from it. Those people are rare, if if that can sink in your brain somehow, that can be how you fix it. That you're actually setting yourself up for a better life if you chill on the dogmatism.
And I suppose if someone is being very dogmatic, how can we help others to maybe not be? I mean, they might learn that for themselves, but you don't want to reward bad behavior, do you? So you probably don't want to engage and get into a shouting match, or, well, no, you're wrong, this is what's right, or this is, but maybe encourage people to possibly consider other people's views.
A fight you're going to lose.
So there's no point. Right. There's no point getting involved, is there? Not involved, but there's no point fighting with someone. It's probably better to try and encourage them to sort of just tone down their opinions.
And later, like, don't even do it that week.
You know, true.
Like, do let them cool down. Weeks later, you know, let them cool down. It's true. It's not that dogma has to. They're not necessarily mad when they say these things, although sometimes they are. So but you might incite the madness if you challenge it.
Mm. So. Yeah, I think so. And I guess to a degree, I think we have to accept that there are going to be some people who are just going to be that way. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there's some way that we can filter it out, because there are, I'm sure we've all got people in our lives who we're very fond of, but do tend to kind of state things in a very dogmatic way.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can almost end up doing a bit of damage control after they've swept through a scene. Yes. You're a bit like, that's just what they're like.
Yeah.
They don't mean it. And But I wonder sort of like how you can tame that. Like, if you're in a workplace situation, you've got somebody like that who's otherwise a good person, but despite your best efforts, they haven't really toned down because I think I wonder if there are some people that just don't have the ability or just can't like turn that radar inside.
It's just another life lesson for you then. Let it be. Or let people be wrong is another one that happens through, not daily, but I think about it fairly often, like I come across some kind of thing and they're talking about something, some kind of conversation is happening and somebody who's kind of leading it, I just know that they're wrong. I just, in my experience and what they're saying just has some factual incorrectness to it, but I just let it go. Just let them be wrong. Maybe somebody else will correct them. Maybe they won't, but I was wrong a lot. And some people just let me be wrong. Just let it go. People can just be wrong about stuff sometimes. It's okay.
And I suppose the effect on that is that you have a calmer day you don't give yourself.
Not it's your like, job to fix the whole world.
Yeah, that's true. I've sort of like started to be a bit more active in my kind of muting as well. There are certain characters. My
great grandmother
used to just, I'll upload an infographic about it. She used to just say, very simply, she'd say, stick with the happy people, which I know is, but she just used to say, in life, there are people, some people that are just difficult to be around.
So you can learn from both. I was worried that it was going to be my great, great, great grandfather was kind of racist or something. And that's always a good lesson because you're like, you can't fix those people. Although I don't love that. I feel like you can fight racism a little bit, but when it's in your family, the prevailing wisdom is just like, let them be old and cranky and racist or whatever. And that's kind of a lesson in that you can, they're your family, so you extra have to do that. But when it's, you can also choose that path when they're not your family.
Yeah, because I think you can end up expending a lot of energy if somebody is not going to be moved. You can end up just kind of like,
and
just
then you're not using that energy where you could have used that energy on your friends or your family or your business or
areas where you can get a bit of traction. I remember this guy who's a gardener, really wise old guy, and we're involved in some community project and we're putting a fence up, and we were doing it wrong. And he said, "Oh, you're doing it wrong." And he said it very gently. And the person who was leading our team was like, "No, no." And so he just sat back and watched us probably for a couple of hours put this fence up. We did it wrong. It fell over. And he just very calmly sort of came over and gathered up all the fence posts. Was like, "Right, this is how you do it." And he very calmly showed. And he didn't humiliate us, but he just showed us the proper way. And that's a lesson, I think, that's always stuck with me. So I think sometimes with people that are very dogmatic, at some point, they're probably going to end up getting themselves into a bit of a pickle. And I think maybe rather than in that situation kind of getting some sort of joy out of it, or, you know, kind of rubbing their nose in it, it's a good opportunity to kind of to show them a better way, maybe. Okay, shall we have a bit of a wrap up there and do a tool star?
Yeah. Okay, that brings us to our tool star section. So this is where we look at a new app or a tool, some kind of service that can benefit us as people involved in web development or in the wider web community. And this week, we're going to look at a new offering because we've got Chris on the show as well. And I think it was released yesterday, was it? Or today? CodePen Projects.
Absolutely.
Which is pretty exciting. How would you describe it in a few, in one sentence, Chris?
No, sure.
Or 21 sentences.
I should practice this because it's, yeah, that's, I hadn't actually, but it's.
Okay.
A file system in the cloud, I guess, is a, like, that's kind of a bad way to do it, but the. That's the, it's more, I don't know, sublime text in the browser, you know, that kind of thing. Or I don't know what text editor y'all use. I'm already blowing past my thing, but the idea is you get a sidebar of files to, yeah. You know, it's more, it's an IDE, not if you're used to normal CodePen or even the other apps that allow you to do that. You know, there's JS Fiddle and JS Bin and stuff. They're similar in that HTML, CSS, JavaScript. You write it in the panes and you see the results of that, which is totally sticking around on CodePen, and I love and is perfect for so many things. And yeah, it's just an integral part of CodePen and always will be. It's limited in that when people learn, you know, to code or whatever, you know, maybe the first coding class you ever take, and I've seen this happen, like, we can't use CodePen or a tool like that, even though it'd be convenient because we don't have to install any software or anything. We could just go. We can't even make like a homepage, an about page, and a contact page because there's not three indexed, there's not three HTML files that we can make in here. So we're like, we really need to make that possible. So with CodePen Projects, it's like you can have as many files as you'd like. I mean, there's limits based on what plan and stuff you're on. But do you need images? Just drag and drop them on here. Do you need fancy future stuff like ES6 modules and stuff? We support all that too. So it's kind of it has a build process and step to kind of abstract some of the complexities of modern day website development away. You know, you can use preprocessors and fancy stuff like that, but at its root, it's just you get your own little file system, do whatever you want with, just like you would on your local computer.
Yeah, I used it briefly earlier and was really impressed. It's going to sound a bit obsequious of me to say this because you're on the show, but because CodePen's great, loads of people use it, really useful for sharing stuff, and I felt like it was just, I didn't know CodePen was missing the ability to have multiple files until I saw CodePen Projects and thought, oh yeah. And just as a little test, created a SAS file, a second SAS file, imported it, put in a function and a mix in, saw that it produced the CSS. You know, it's one of those things where I thought, does this work? Checked it. Oh yeah, it works. You know, of course it does, but I wanted to see it in action. And
I love that. I'm glad that something you expected would work. And yeah, so you can do like a relative path include, you know, with your SAS. And that way, you know, just like, because when you're working on an actual website, of course you break it up. I write my SAS and I break my mix-ins into a file and I break my layout into a file. Maybe I have a file just for typography and stuff. That's how I like to work. And now you can, and you just couldn't do that in CodePen. Or if, you know, you might have tons of CSS and it's too much for the one little editor thing in pens. Now this is, you know, just more like how you'd work in real life.
It does feel like home. Like I use Atom and I use quite a dark theme and it's a similar sort of theme. And you use Sublime Text, Mark?
No, still? I use Atom as well.
Oh, Atom
what
as well.
Theme do you use?
It's like the SETI theme. SETI, yeah. And CodePen Projects, similar, you know, and it's got the icons that you expect, or close enough to the icons you expect for... I just did the basic HTML5 project and built on that. I mean, there's loads of different templates and things. But I don't have a paid plan, and I was able to use it. So is it like a very limited set for free
plan holders? And that's just the deal. I mean, we're a business, so we just have to... This was a big deal for us. It took us a year to develop this. I mean, it's an all-new tech stack for us. This is all React and Redux and Immutable.js and stuff. So there's some learning that had to happen. It literally... fires up a Docker container for you on a server on AWS and literally runs a real file system and has a message bus back and forth. It's a Gulp build on the back end. It runs Webpack within Gulp. I mean, this was a very, very complicated thing for us that took us a long time. And we're not, you know, we did take a little bit of funding, but it's, we're not a, you know, we're not a big, super well-funded, you know, experiment, just give everything away and see if it works kind of thing. We're a bootstrap thing trying to be a profitable company. And I know that was a long way to say, but yes, we do offer it for free because there's a business incentive to have freemium plans so people can play like yourself. But yeah, you're limited to just the one project. So if you wanted, if it was just a junk project and you wanted to build something for real, just throw it out and build another one, you know?
Yeah.
Or if you need more than that, you go pro. And even at our lowest pro plan, you get like a bunch of projects and stuff. And then there's, you know, the slightly higher kind of middle plan is the one that we really is like, if you're going to go all in on projects and do tons of stuff, that's the one you go for, kind of our middle plan. And then it has deployment and domain mapping as a part of it, meaning like you can just go to your domain registrant and point some A records at us. And
oh, wow.
You have a real site that you're kind of managing through CodePen.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
Yeah, and so it's not for, you can't run you PHP. It's not going to be your Ruby on Rails site or whatever, but it'll be, you know, I'm making my wedding site through it and stuff. And little one-off pages. And one of our employees, Jake, is making a Firebase-backed thing so he can have like a more of a blog. Like, you know, he has data that he can store to a... Because, you know, I don't know if how much you've looked into Firebase, but it's kind of a front-end API thing for real-time data and auth and stuff. It's kind of cool.
Oh, right. Haven't looked at it. Well, thanks very much. That's good. We like it. Well, I say, I don't know if you've had a chance to check it out.
I've not had a chance to sort of actually use it. But
it's unhateable. You love it.
It's very good. Yeah. So to our listeners, definitely have a look at that as an alternative to an IDE on your machine.
Yeah, okay, so we'll pop a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. How many dogs have you got, Chris?
Couple dogs.
Two dogs.
Fix it in post. Fix it in post.
It sounds like 22 dogs.
How big are they?
One of each size.
And we're gonna have to leave that in. We leave all the bits in.
No. Right.
So this is our jukebox where we add a track to the Relative Paths playlist for coding along to, or the Relative Paths alt playlist for doing whatever you want to do along to. So did you want to go first, Ben?
Okay, yeah, sure. Mine is a track called Eve from the Anchor Song album Ceremonial. And Anchor Song is an alter ego, I guess, of a Japanese guy called Masaki Yoshida. And I think he's been making music for a while now, a good 5, 6, 7 years maybe. But this is from the 2016 album, and it's, you know, my kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You probably already guessed. You had a listen earlier.
I did. I liked it. Yeah.
And it's sort of the sort of thing I go for. Very electronic,
ambient-y, BT.
Yeah.
Well, not really ambient-y,
very
is it?
Subtle BT.
Yeah.
Like someone's put a sustain pedal on and left it on throughout. I mean, it's the kind of thing I think that would probably put a lot of people to sleep, but that's best for me because it doesn't intrude. It's just in the background. It doesn't disturb me. But it drowns out the rest of the world while I'm working.
I wonder how artists feel about that. If you were to see him and you said, yeah, I love your track, it makes me go to sleep. Whether he'd be flattered by that.
Yeah, he'd be upset, probably. But, you know, he's not going to hear it, is he?
No.
And when I tweet about it, I'll say something different.
Okay, right. Shall we have a quick listen?
Yeah, let's have a listen.
History in Rust by Do make, say, think. I always get that in the wrong order unless I read it. I didn't realise, I was just having a look around, and it's two members of Broken Social Scene, which is a band I like. And it's quite nice when you sort of, when you listen to something and then you sort of dig into it and you find that, you know, they're part of other bands that you like and they hang out with other bands that you like. And I guess it's kind of part of the whole post-rock thing, because you had a listen to it and thought it sounded a bit like
a Silver Mount Zion. Yeah.
Which was, I had not listened to a Silver Mount Zion track for a long time. So, yeah. Anyway, so we're digging into a post-rock hole. But it's it starts out kind of electronic-y and sort of keyboardy, and then it goes very guitar-y, and it's kind of very loose. They get a few notes wrong and they leave it in, which is like, which I quite like. It makes it sort of feel very sort of organic. This is the most pretentious explanation of
I might cut this out.
Ever.
No, I won't.
but I really like it. Here it is. Have a listen.
Okay.
So Chris, you've got one for us as well, haven't you? Did you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I admit I don't know. Like, I didn't get. I look forward to checking out the playlist later, but I don't know really the vibe on these playlists, you know. So hopefully it's very random, because I just picked just any old thing that is kind of a favorite of mine. And this was it comes with a minor story in that I love this artist. His name is Gregory Alan Isakoff, and he's in Denver, Colorado, here in the U.S. artist who's really kind of celebrated there. And I've loved him for years and years and years. And I got to visit Denver in a Code Pen meetup out there. And a buddy of mine who has turned his career into a bit of like doing album art and posters and stuff for bands, I was doing some work for him, and he's like, oh, you know what? I have to send Gregory proof of a poster I'm working on for him, but instead of me just emailing it to him, why don't we go out to his house? You know, why not? And I was like, what? I will go with you to that house. But it turns out it's not even a house. It's like a beautiful farm near Boulder, Colorado, just like overlooking the mountains. And like, it's not just a farm, but like a community farm. So other musicians live there and stuff, and little outbuildings, and there's a beautiful music studio there. I'm like, oh, this is perfect. Of course, this is how you live in my dream. You know, amazing thing. And then, you know, the conversation was almost nothing about music. You know, it's the people who are way into it. They just want to talk about, you know, philosophy and life and stuff. So even that was fun. So we hung out and had a fire, and I got to meet one of my artists that I've just loved for years and years and years. So I just picked I kind of like everything he does, so I just picked one of his more popular and very good songs, the Stable Song.
That's amazing. Has that ruined meeting any other musicians you like in the future now?
No, it made me feel good, because I wasn't like, hi, my name's Chris, I really like that one song you do, Evelyn, and I gotta go by, you know, like, I was like, oh, I managed to not do that, you know. I managed to just be like, oh, hey man, you need a hand, you know, feeding the sheep or whatever. It's like, I seemed cool, I think, you know. If not cool, you know, not like get this kid off my farm.
That's good. That does sound like a brilliant experience, because they do say never meet your heroes, but it sounds like...
Nah, he was even cooler than I
am. That was really good. Okay,
sure,
well, that's good.
He doesn't remember me, no. That's okay.
I hope whoever you meet next is as cool, so they've got a lot to live up to.
Yeah.
So let's have a listen then.
Watch the world spinning ways, my machine. And I've gone crazy, couldn't you tell? I threw stones at the stars, but the whole sky fell.
So that's our show. Thanks again, Chris, for joining us. That was a really interesting discussion. I'm not sure if we quite managed to fix everything, but it just, just fascinating. So how do people follow you and discover what you're doing online and stuff?
Chris Coyer, that's Coyier, kind of everywhere. Twitter, GitHub, CodePen, Dribbble, all that stuff. Happy to, chrisquire@gmail.com too, if you have questions that are private and prefer them to be emailed, totally fine with me. I have a book, Practical SVG, which is pretty easy to Google, and that's it. Thanks for having me on.
And Shop Talk Show, of course, as well.
Yep. Just, you know, it's a lot like this one. You just, two fellers talking about the web.
Good stuff. So thanks again for joining us. So we are Relative Pals on Twitter. We're Relative Pals on Facebook. We're Relative Pals on Google Plus. Sorry, I tripped over that because I never say Google Plus in a live situation because nobody goes there. But we're there anyway. Reviews are always helpful. They help people find our show.
Yeah, we need some US reviews because, you know, being a UK-based podcast, that's fine. But we have more listeners in the US than the UK, don't we?
Yeah, but we need to mobilize our US listenership.
So yeah, we do.
We're going to come over and have a few town hall meetings about reviews and stuff. We're not going
to. So if you hate dogmatism and you like Chris, leave a review.
Way to leverage some emotional blackmail. So again, thanks for listening to us, and we'll be back in your ears in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay, goodbye.